So we'll start with Polish group actions. I'm using the same letters as Greg, but they mean different things. So G will be a Polish topological group. Now the subject or the branch of mathematics called topological groups is mostly about locally compact groups. But there's a few of us who don't have enough sense to stick to the locally compact case. I'm one of them. If you're not, I feel obligated to warn you that absolutely nothing I have to say today will be of interest in the locally compact case. But X is Polish, A is a continuous action, and sometimes use the term Polish G-space to mean the same thing as a continuous action by a Polish group on a Polish space. I'll be changing the topology on X, making it finer, but it will always stay Polish, and the action will always be continuous. Now, let me give you the minimal list of examples necessary to follow the talk. So the first example, if K is a compact metric space, the topology of uniform convergence, then HK, the group of homeomorphisms of K, goes that way, is a Polish group, generally speaking, not locally compact. A closed subgroup of a Polish group is Polish. In some sense, these first two examples give us all of them, because there's a theorem of Uspensky that every Polish group is a closed subgroup of the group of homeomorphisms of the Hilbert cube. And I want to discuss some classes of Polish groups. Okay, now by metric, I'll always mean one compatible with the topology of the group. So a metric is left invariant if, when you multiply on the left, you preserve distance. There's a theorem of Birkhoff and Kekatani that says any Polish group, in fact any metrizable group, has a left invariant metric. Now, it will also have a right invariant metric, but in general, they're two different metrics, not one which is invariant from both sides. So here's an example. The uniform metric on the group of homeomorphisms of K, it's easy to see that that's right invariant. Now, some groups do have a metric that's invariant from both sides, so that's a special case. We'll give it a name. We'll call it TSI. For two-sided invariant metrics. A Polish group, since it's Polish, has a complete metric. It has a left invariant metric, but they're not necessarily the same. If it has one metric, which is both, then we'll call it a CLI group. It's one with a complete left invariant metric. When we began looking at this, Greg was calling them LIC groups. I was calling them CLI groups. He seems to have come around, so it's nice to know that I'm more influential than he is. Okay, if you got two left invariant metrics on a group, then a sequence is Cauchy with respect to one, if and only if it's Cauchy with respect to the others. So we can talk about a sequence being left Cauchy. Of course, convergence being a topological product, it's the same property, it's the same for all metrics. So if one metric is complete, if one left invariant metric is complete, they all are. But to prove something is not a CLI group, we just have to check one left invariant metric rather than all of them. Now here's some classes of groups. On the bottom row, we got those that are algebraically nice. Toward the top, we got those that are topologically small, compact groups. What Greg was talking about, countable discrete groups. Now, one of those lines means that the class on the left is a subclass of the class on the right. So all those inclusions are proper, and there are no other inclusions. And my main interest is in the class of CLI groups, and that makes it look fairly large, like a fairly large class. In some ways it is, and it's got a lot of closure properties. As the theorem shows, a closed subgroup is CLI. The continuous homomorphic image of a CLI group is CLI, equivalently a quotient group, modulo a closed subgroup. And a countable product, it's preserved under countable products. Now here's an example of a CLI, of a class of CLI groups that aren't anywhere to the left. If K is a compact metric, compact Polish space, G is a group, a Polish group, with some metric, then we put the uniform metric. This is literally a subspace of the function space, the functions from the continuous functions from K into Z with the metric of uniform, the uniform metric. It's a G delta, so it's a Polish group with pointwise multiplication. Now, if G is Polish, this is Polish, and if G is CLI, this is CLI. But if G is locally compact, then in general, this group will not be locally compact. So it gets you out of the locally compact class, and indeed out of all the smaller classes, and into these CLI groups, which are not any simpler than CLI. Now, there's some examples of this that come up in practice. Okay, loop groups are the most thoroughly studied special case. That's when K is the circle. And gauge groups and current groups come up in physics. In gauge theory, to the extent that I understand it, there are local symmetries. So G is a Lie group of physical symmetries, and K is physical space. Now the fourth and last example, and the one that's, at least to logicians, the most important, is S infinity, the group of permutations of the natural numbers. That's a subspace of the bare space, G delta, so it's a, well, the operations are continuous, clearly. So it's a Polish group. And I want to consider the usual complete metric on the bare space. And if we restrict that metric to S infinity, well, it's easy to check that it's left invariant but not right invariant. So in S infinity and its subgroups, a sequence is left Cauchy if and only if it converges in the bare space. That is, if it converges to a necessarily to a one-to-one function, but not necessarily onto, then it's left Cauchy, and it will be left, well, left convergent. Well, it will be convergent in the group if what it converges to is actually onto and not just one-to-one. Okay, well, from this and the previous remark, it follows that S infinity is not a CLI group. And indeed, you can see that a closed subgroup of S infinity is CLI if and only if it's closed in the bare space. So one more class of groups. We'll call it big if S infinity is the continuous homomorphic image of a closed subgroup of G, otherwise G is small. And by the closure properties of the class of CLI groups, all CLI groups are small. Okay, so much for examples of groups. Now let's look at some examples of continuous actions. There's only two here. HK acts on K by evaluation. And finally, I want to talk about the logic actions, which is in green because I'm going to more or less define it. Okay, now for every language, now for the moment, a language is a collection of symbols, a bunch of relation symbols, or function symbols, constant symbols. We won't worry about formulas. Okay, now just to be specific, let's consider the language with one binary relation symbol. And we want to consider structure, countably infinite structures whose universe is literally the natural numbers. So an L structure is just a binary relation on the natural numbers. By identifying it with its characteristic function, we can get an L structure with universe natural numbers is a point in the space 2 to the n cross n, which I'm calling X sub L. It's essentially the space of countably infinite L structures. Okay, so we think of a point little x as encoding the structure fractor A sub x. In the old days, model theorists used to use fractor letters for structures, and I'm old-fashioned. So that's the structure whose universe is the natural number and whose binary relation is just what you think it is. Okay, now the logic action is an action of S infinity on this. And if you think about it, say you got a structure on omega, take an element of the group that's a permutation of omega, so you're just renaming the elements of the structure, you're getting an isomorphic structure on omega. And similarly, given two isomorphic structures on omega, that corresponds to a permutation of omega. So that's the action. Okay, G, a group element G acts on, takes X to Y if AY, the model coded by Y, is the isomorphic image of AX under the permutation G. And it's not hard to check. That is a continuous function by S infinity on XL. And two points of XL are in the same orbit of this action if and only if they encode isomorphic structures. So the orbit equivalence relation is isomorphism. Now, this has absolutely nothing to do with this particular language. We could do it for any countable language. So there's infinitely many logic actions, one for every countable language. We, given any countable language L, we code up the L structures by some space XL, which is homeomorphic to the Cantor set. We have a continuous action by S infinity. Oops, sorry. We have a, for every countable, there we go. For every countable language L, we've got a continuous action by S infinity on a space homeomorphic to to the Cantor set, where the orbit equivalence relation is isomorphism. Now, the second part of the title of my talk is model theory, and this is a very diverse audience. We actually have one real model theorist here, and I suspect that there are some people here who have absolutely zero background in model theory. So I hope that I can convey to the latter group enough model theory that they have some idea of what it is I'm trying to generalize. And I hope the former will forgive me for taking a very narrow, unimpressive part of model theory and calling it model theory. We want to build up a language, and the useful language for purposes of descriptive set theory and group actions is not the usual one. It's a language for people who want to say infinitely many things at the same time. So we allow infinitary conjunctions, and that language is called L sub omega 1 omega. The omega 1 means you can have infinitary conjunctions and disjunctions. The omega means only finite strings of quantifiers. So you have atomic formulas. Those are built from the symbols of L. And so if you've got a relation symbol, you can say two variables are related. Equality, you can say two variables are equal. You can use negation, quantifiers, finite or countable conjunctions and disjunctions. Now here's an example of a countable disjunction. We go to the language of groups. Well, you can write the group axioms in finitary language. But suppose I want to say it's a torsion group, that is, every element has finite order. Well, I can say in finitary logic, V has order at most n. V, n times is the identity. Okay, and then I take an infinite disjunction, and I'm saying for every V, for every element of the group, or an infinitary or, so there is some n such that V has order n. So in this language, one can say, or one can write a sentence in the language whose models are the torsion groups. It's less obvious but true that you cannot say that in finitary languages. So that's the language I want to talk about. Yeah. No, quantifying over the structure. The natural numbers is not part of the structure. So we got language of groups. You can say there exists a member of the group for all members of the group. Yeah, right. Now, any other questions? Okay. Let's see. Okay, if fractor A is an L structure and phi is a formula. And we take n elements of that absolute value of A as the universe. So A has an underlying set, which is the absolute value of A, and a bunch of relations and functions. And that I'm defining the double turnstile symbol. That means the sentence you obtain by plugging A1 through AN in for the variables, V1 through VN, there's now no more free variables, so that's a sentence. And that sentence is true of the structure A. That double turnstile symbol means truth. Truth in, and this is a binary property, a property of a sentence and a model. A sentence is true in a model. Okay, now, we've already defined the logic action JL for this language L, and orbits are isomorphism classes. If sigma is an L omega 1 omega sentence with n free variables and A1 through AN are in the natural numbers, the universe of our model, because we're now talking about models whose universe is literally the natural numbers, then this mod sigma A1 through AN are all X's, such that the model, such that phi of A1 AN is true in that model. All structures for which that's true. Oops, sorry. That sigma should be a phi or vice versa. Sigma. Same formula. Okay, now the reason this language is nicer from a descriptive set theoretic point of view than the obvious finitary language is a theorem of Lopez Escobar that says that the set of models it's obvious that the set of models defined by one of these sentences is an invariant Borel set, and this is the converse. Given any invariant Borel set, there's a sentence in the language that defines that set. I know of nothing similar to that for finitary logic. Now, a problem arises because although L, that is the set of symbols, is countable, there are uncountably many sentences in this language, and that causes some problems, so we'll just take a large countable subset. And there's even a name for that. That's called a fragment. So a fragment is a countable collection of formulas containing the atomic formulas closed under negation quantifiers and finite as opposed to countable conjunctions and disjunctions. Closed under subformulas means, for example, if a conjunction is in the fragment, both conjuncts are in there. Now, the smallest fragment is the usual finitary language, no infinite conjunctions or disjunctions. And in general, one can think of this as a generalization. Some of the theorems of finitary logic generalize to an arbitrary fragment, although most of them don't because you don't have the compactness theorem, but some do. The theory of atomic, homogeneous, and saturated models generalizes. So in this talk, by model theory, I'm referring only to the theory of this language, not the model theory of finitary logic, and only to countable structures. Now, when you restrict model theory down that far, there's not much left, but what little is left will generalize. I think literally all of it generalizes. So this is what I want to generalize. Okay. Now, we have a topology, a usual topology on XL, which is homeomorphic to the Cantor set, but that's not the interesting one. So I want to put a finer topology on this space. This definition takes up two screens also. Maybe not. Just one. Okay, the topology generated by the basis. So take take a sentence sigma, a formula sigma, and plug in a bunch of integers, consider all structures that satisfy that sentence, well, that sentence obtained by plugging the integers. So anything you can define in the fragment, now since the fragment is countable, this is a countable basis for the topology, and that is a polished topology, finer than the usual one, and the action remains continuous. Okay, so that's my quick summary of model theory. That's what I want to generalize. So the first thing to generalize is concepts of model theory, that is, definitions. And we've already done some. We know that the set of models of a sentence is an invariant Borel set, and we know that the orbits are isomorphism classes. So I want to translate from the language of model theory into the language of group actions. So now we'll fix our L and F, and A and B are structures, and I'm going to say A is F equivalent to B means they satisfy the same sentences. Exactly the same sentences. Now, if F is the smallest fragment, that's usually called elementary equivalence. So any sentence true in one is true in the other. Now, if two models are isomorphic, they're elementarily equivalent, but not conversely. Let me give you the model theorist's favorite example. All algebraically closed fields of characteristic zero are elementarily equivalent. They're not isomorphic. There's the algebraic numbers, which has no transcendental elements. There are also even countable algebraically closed fields with transcendental elements. So they're not isomorphic, but there's no sentence in the finitary language that says there is a transcendental element. So you can't tell them apart in the language. Okay, now we want to translate this. So suppose we've got two X and Y and X sub L, which encode L structures. Well, what does it mean to say they're inequivalent? There's a sentence of the language that separates them, but that sentence is a Clopen set in this TF topology. So to say they're elementarily equivalent just means Y is in the closure of the orbit of X with respect to the TF topology. Now, this makes sense for any group G in any G space. Given two points, you can say one is in the closure of the orbit and the other. So we've generalized this concept. Okay, next thing to generalize is an n-type. Okay, it's a consistent collection of F formulas in N free variables, and it's realized in a structure A if there's an N tuple that satisfies them. It's a principal N type if there's one formula that implies all the other formulas in the N type. That's what that complicated definition says. And a structure is MF atomic if it realizes no non-principal n-types for F. Now let's go back to the example of algebraically closed fields of characteristic zero in finitary logic. Okay, we'll talk about one-types. N is one. Saying V satisfies a particular polynomial equation, that's a principal n-type, that's one formula. Saying V is transcendental means it doesn't satisfy any polynomial. So there's infinitely many formulas. That's a one type, which is not principal. Okay, and the algebraic numbers does not realize that one type. And although it's not obvious, it doesn't realize any other non-principal N type either. So the algebraic numbers is an atomic model. Okay, well, we want to generalize the concept of atomic model. Okay, it's a theorem of Miller and Suzuki, that's Doug Miller. If X is a point in the space of the logic action, the structure it encodes is atomic if and only if the orbit is a TFG delta. Again, that makes sense for any group in any G space. there are G-delta orbits, or there may be G-delta orbits. And in fact, this is something that's been considered outside of model theory. For example, there's a famous theorem of Ephros about G-delta orbits. Now, the next concept is that of an F embedding. In the F is finitary logic, this is called an elementary embedding. So an F embedding of A into B is an embedding, a one-to-one function, which preserves the truth of every formula in F. Okay, if phi is true in A, when you plug in A1 through AN, then phi is true in B when you plug in the image of A1 through AN. It's an embedding which preserves truth. And in a sense, it's the main concept of model theory. This is kind of this is the morphisms of model theory. So we certainly want to generalize that. Okay, G is now an arbitrary Polish group, X an arbitrary Polish G space, so A is a continuous action. And by a left movement from X to Y, I mean a sequence of members of the group G, which is left Cauchy and such that Gi dot X converges to Y. As the action of Gi on X, that's an element of the space that converges to Y. It's left movable if there exists a left movement, and similarly for right. And note, because we're talking about convergence to Y, it depends on the topology of the space. If I change the topology, I change the concept of movability. Okay, here's a theorem. L is a language, F a fragment, X and Y in the XL. The following are equivalent. AX is F embeddable into AY if and only if X is left movable to Y with respect to TX, if and only if Y is right movable to X with respect to the topology TF. Now you can kind of see why that's true. Let's look at B, for example. That means there's a left Cauchy sequence. Now remember, left Cauchy means it converges to a one-to-one, not necessarily onto function from end to end. Well, that one-to-one function from end to end gives the embedding from one structure on N into another structure on N. And the other condition, the condition that Gi dot X goes to Y, if you think about what the topology says, that says it preserves F formulas. Okay. So we have two generalizations of F embeddability, or of elementary embeddability: left movability and reverse right movability. And are they equivalent? If not, then we have two kinds of generalized model theory, right? Right generalized model theory and left generalized model theory. So I want to come back to this in a moment, but first, a quick proposition that says this behaves the way you think it does. So it's it's left movable to something in the same orbit. It's transitive, and so left movability is really a property of the orbits, not of the property of the points. And it gives you a relation on orbits which is transitive and reflexive, just like elementary embeddability. But as shown by the example of elementary embeddability, it's not going to be symmetric or anti-symmetric. Okay, now let me go to the question, are they equivalent? Is left movability and inverse right movability equivalent? Well, here's half of it. Okay, if G is an arbitrary, you've got an arbitrary Polish G space, an arbitrary G. If X is left movable to Y, then Y is right movable to X. And that's half our equivalence. The other half happens to be false. And here's a counterexample. Let's take the group of homeomorphisms of the unit interval acting on the unit interval by evaluation. There's two orbits, the interior and the endpoints. Well, it's obvious a sequence of endpoints can't converge to an interior point. So the endpoints are neither left movable nor right movable to the interior. By the previous theorem, if the interior was movable, was left movable to the endpoints would be right movable to the interior. So the interior is not left movable, but the interior is right movable to the endpoints. And here's the example. Gn is a sequence which, well, here it is, this function. And that converges to a onto but not one-to-one function. So it converges in the uniform topology as its right Cauchy. And it moves 1/2 to 1, or Gn of 1/2 goes to 1, so it's a right movement of 1/2 to 1. The interior right moves to the endpoints, even though the endpoints don't left move to the interior. Okay, so we do in fact have two different generalizations of elementary equivalence. Of elementary embedding in two kinds of model theory, generalized model theory. Although as it happens, the equivalence is not just logic actions. For any closed subgroup of S infinity and any decent topology, they're equivalent. Let's consider CLI groups, CLI groups, and remember left Cauchy means convergent for these groups. So for these groups, it's trivial. X is left or right movable to Y if and only if they're in the same orbit. It's a totally silly concept, which is probably why nobody ever thought of it before, because, you know, in locally compact groups, it's not terribly interesting, but this is important for later reference. Okay, well, Part three of the talk, which I've just completed, is generalizing concepts, is generalizing definitions. One might get more ambitious and hope to generalize some theorems, too, so that's part four. Here's a theorem of Vogt that atomic models are prime models. Okay, if A is a countable F atomic model and B is F equivalent to A, then A is F embeddable into B. Go back to algebraically closed fields of characteristic zero, the algebraic and finitary logic is our fragment. The algebraic numbers are the atomic model, and indeed they are embeddable into every other algebraically closed field of characteristic zero. Now it's not totally obvious, but those embeddings preserve the truth of formulas, so that's an elementary embedding. Okay? It's not just algebraically closed fields. It's an entirely general theorem of model theory. Atomic models will F embed into anything F equivalent. Now let's rephrase Vogt's theorem in group action terminology. Okay, well, an atomic model is a G delta orbit. To say that B is F equivalent to A means that the point that encodes it's in the closure of the orbit of A. And F embeddable corresponds to left movability. So this, in red, this is literally the same thing as the Vogt's theorem on top of the screen in black. Okay, literally the same. It says you got the Polish infinity space XL TF. So the logic action with the TF topology, not the usual topology. And X and Y are points that if the orbit of X is G delta and Y is in its closure, X is left movable to Y. Okay, and this theorem makes sense for any group G, any Polish group, in any G space. That's not true in any Polish group G in any G space, but it makes sense. Okay, so why is it not true? Well, okay, consider, again, the same counterexample. The interior is a G-delta orbit. The endpoints are in the closure of that orbit. But we cannot left move the interior to the endpoint. We can right move it, but not left move it. So what goes wrong? What goes wrong is we don't have enough open sets. The TF topology has a basis with a lot of closure properties. Now remember, F is a fragment. F is not an arbitrary collection of formulas. F is a fragment, which means it's got a lot of closure properties. And since the basis is built out of F, the basis has a lot of closure properties. So we would like, in general, to have a basis with a lot of closure properties. Well, it's impossible to get all these closure properties. For example, the definition of fragment says closed under negation. That means the basis is closed under complement. It's a Clopen basis. Well, now if G is a connected group and a continuous action by a connected group, if you've got a non-trivial orbit, you can't have a Clopen basis. So you can't have all the closure properties of the TF basis. So what we want to get is as many closure properties as possible, but not more than that. And that makes things rather difficult and technical. So it's a very technical definition, not suitable for general audiences, but it's an enhanced Polish G-space. It would fill both screens. Informally, X is an enhanced Polish G-space if the topology is a countable basis with a lot of closure properties. And the definition is not important. What's important is the theorem that we can always enlarge the topology to make it enhanced. And so it starts over here. You're given a Polish G-space. I is a new topology T, which is finer than tau, got more open sets, it's still Polish, it follows from A and B that T and tau have the same Borel sets, A is still continuous, and now this finer topology is, in fact, enhanced. Okay, so we can always add stuff and make it enhanced, and now we have the generalized Vought theorem. Literally the Vought theorem, but now instead of the logic spaces, the logic actions, it generalizes to any enhanced Polish G space. If the orbit of X is G delta and Y is in its closure, then X is left movable to Y, and that implies that Y is right movable to X, so we get a theorem of both generalized left generalized and right generalized model theory. For future reference, let's notice the corollary for CLI groups. Left movable means in the same orbit. So that says if X is a G delta orbit and Y is in the closure of X, then Y is literally in X. So if G is a CLI group and you have an enhanced Polish G space, what the Vought theorem says is that every G delta orbit is closed. So to use inappropriate model theoretic terminology, for CLI groups and enhanced G-spaces, a theory with an atomic model is omega categorical. Okay, so here's a theorem of generalized model theory. Now, I should leave that there. Since the purpose of this talk is to convince you that the theorems of model theory generalize from model theory to other actions, I should give you more than one example. So I feel obligated to give more examples of theorems of model theory, but I don't feel obligated to tell you what they mean. So I won't give definitions or anything like that. But here's some other model theoretic theorems that generalize. Some of you will no doubt recognize them. Atomic models are homogeneous. Model is saturated. Saturated if and only if it's homogeneous and universal. If a complete theory has a saturated model, then it has an atomic model. Well, I've stated these as theorems of finitary logic, but it's true for any fragment F. So these three are old theorems from a famous paper of Vought, I think from the 50s, for finitary logic, and it was just observed that they generalize. The fourth result is a little different flavor. And in fact, I think all the rest of the theory of atomic homogeneous and saturated models generalizes. There's Steele's theorem on pseudo L omega 1 omega classes, which have uncountably many but not continuum many models. So to abuse the language, counterexamples to Vaught's conjecture, it says that, assuming that it's pi 1-1 determinacy, if you got one such class, sigma 1-1 invariant set, you can shrink it down to another one, which has where the models all fit together nicely. As there's a CUB set of ordinals, the models are indexed by those ordinals, and if you go to the ordinal alpha, consider F alpha, the fragment of formulas with quantifier rank less than alpha, the alpha model in your list is F alpha saturated, and then F alpha embeds in the next model, and it limits, you take union of chains, and it's all very nice. So this was published, there's a statement of the theorem without proof, was published in 78. So I've spent the last 24 years trying to prove it, and I can now vouch for the accuracy of this, and in fact tell you that it generalizes. Okay, so we've had generalizing concepts, that is definitions, and generalizing theorems. Now let's talk about generalizing proof techniques. In model theory, they have something called the back and forth construction. Well, that corresponds to going back and forth between the left invariant metric and the right invariant metric on the group. So you want to build a sequence which is Cauchy with respect to both metrics. And it turns out if you do that, that will indeed converge to a group element. Okay, now, if you lost me on my model theory, I'm going to change the subject so you can wake up, and I'm going to talk about something else, namely applications of generalized model theory. What's it good for? Well, generalization may be of some interest in itself, but as it happens, it can be used to solve a problem that arose from completely non-model theoretic considerations. At least once that's happened. So first the definition, we'll fix an action in the orbit equivalence relation, EA. And EA is smooth if there's a countable collection of Borel or equivalently measurable invariant sets that determine the equivalence relation. So two things are equivalent if they're in the same BIs. Okay, so another way of saying that, there's a Borel function from the space to the Cantor set, such that two things are equivalent if they move to the same point. So that says that the quotient space, the set of equivalence relations, set of equivalence classes, essentially is a set of points in the Cantor set. A measure mu, I should thank Greg for giving the definition. It's non-trivial ergodic. If every invariant measurable set has measure 0 or 1, and that's ergodic, and non-trivial means orbits have measure 0. Now, they can't both, they're incompatible because these BIs are measurable, so that would mean if there was an ergodic measure, the BIs would have measure 0 or 1, so one orbit would have all the measure. We say that an equivalence relation satisfies the Glim-Ephros dichotomy if one or the other holds. And the idea is it's either very good, there are some equivalence definitions, and B is equivalent to saying it contains a copy of the equivalence relation known as E0. Now, the idea of this dichotomy, this arises in the study of operator algebras, not in logic. And the idea is that the quotient space should be either very good or very bad, and bad for a reason. Now, in case A, it's good because it's essentially a set of points in the Cantor set. In the case B, you can see one reason it's bad. Suppose you've got a countable basis consisting of measurable sets. Suppose you try to put a topology on this space with a countable basis consisting of measurable sets. Can't possibly be T1. In other words, there's no definable way, without using the axiom of choice, there's no way to put a topology on the quotient space, which is T1 and second countable. So in some ways, it's really horrible. And it's horrible for a reason, because it contains a copy of this one canonical equivalence relation known as E0. So we'll say it satisfies the dichotomy if either A or B holds, one or the other. Now, not all Polish G-spaces do. For any big group, remember that means S infinity is a continuous homomorphic image of a subgroup. For any big group, there's a G-space violating the dichotomy. I wanted to save this slide. With it. I think I lost what I wanted to save. Oh, here. Okay. Any big group G violates the dichotomy. It's enough to show that S infinity violates it, and then just general transfer properties hold for other groups. And what violate, here's the Polish G-space that violates it. You take the logic action for the language of groups restricted to the G-delta, hence Polish space, of abelian P-groups where P is a fixed prime. Now, without going into detail, let me say that these are that abelian P-groups are characterized by the Ulm invariance, which is a ordinal length sequence of integers. A sequence of countable ordinal length. Now, it can't have a countable separating family in any definable way because it's got a copy of Aleph 1 in it. And it can't contain an ergodic measure for basically the same reason that smooth equivalence relations can't contain ergodic measures, because it's got a separating family which is not countable, but everything is measurable. So that violates the dichotomy. Okay, big theorem, big groups violate it. So I'm interested in which groups satisfy it. Which groups, G, have the property that any G space satisfies the Glim-Ephros dichotomy? Now, the original theorem of Glim says that locally compact groups satisfy the Glim-Ephros, what we now call the Glim-Ephros dichotomy. Later, Ephros published two papers. He considered an arbitrary group G, but he had a condition which implied the Glim-Ephros dichotomy. The first paper, that condition was very complicated. The second paper, his condition was that the orbit equivalence relation is F sigma. For any Polish G space whatsoever, if the orbit equivalence relation is F sigma, you got the dichotomy. That implies Glim's theorem, because by a compactness argument, the equivalence relation is F sigma. But there's really a stronger version of Ephros's theorem, and that's this. If G is any Polish group whatsoever, and G is any Polish G-space, if every G-delta orbit is F sigma, then the action satisfies the Glim-Ephros dichotomy. That's true for any group. Well, later, so a number of special cases of this have also been discovered, in fact, discovered by some people in this room. And later, Harrington, Kekris, and Louveau studied the dichotomy in general, proved that any Borel equivalence relation satisfies it, whether it comes from a group action or not. But of course, the orbit equivalence relation is not always Borel, even for these groups that, even for nice groups. So we want to know, when does it satisfy this dichotomy? Okay, that's the basic question. Which Borel equivalence relations satisfy that dichotomy? Okay, well, we've got the Glim theorem. Locally compact groups do. And then there were stronger, step-by-step stronger results. Hjorth and Seletsky proved TSI groups, T do, two-sided invariant matrix do. And at the present time, the best theorem is this. If G is a CLI group, one with a complete left invariant metric, and X is any Polish G space, then the action satisfies the Glim-Ephros dichotomy. Okay, so we know it's false for big groups. We know it's true for CLI groups. And I, as far as I know, for every single example of a non-CLI group, it's an open question. I should add that even for abelian groups, and therefore for CLI groups, the orbit equivalence relation need not be Borel. So it doesn't satisfy the dichotomy for that reason. Something else. Okay, well, the last thing I want to do is prove a theorem. I give a model theoretic proof of the main theorem. Okay, so first of all, the Glim-Ephros dichotomy depends only on the Borel structure. It has nothing to do with the topology. Right? Either there's a Borel separating family or there's an ergodic measure. So we're allowed to change the topology and preserve the Borel structure. So by a theorem I had earlier, in any Polish G space, I can change the Borel structure. And I can make it an enhanced topology. So we change the topology, we have an enhanced Polish G space with the same structure. It's enough to prove it for that. Now, the generalized Vogt theorem for CLI groups, that corollary, says that for CLI groups in an enhanced Polish G space, if every G delta orbit is closed, well, now we apply Ephros' theorem, and that gives us the Glim-Ephros dichotomy. Now, of course, when you write up the proof, you don't have to talk about Vogt's theorem and generalized elementary embeddings. One can disguise it, but whether you disguise it or not, it's there. I might add that the Glim-Ephros dichotomy implies the Silver dichotomy. It implies it satisfies Vogt's conjecture. This was also the original proof that CLI groups satisfy Vogt's conjecture, although later Hjorth proved a stronger theorem, which gave us a different proof of the Vogt conjecture for CLI groups. That's a good place to stop.